From 12 News, your local election headquarters, this is Newsmakers.
It was the first televised debate between incumbent Democratic Governor Dan McKee and Republican challenger Ashley Kalis.
She came in here for a contract that put hundreds of thousands of dollars in her pocket.
As governor, you have an obligation to help people that are choosing between eating and heating.
The hour-long clash in the 12 News studios got testy at times, and there were clear differences between the two candidates on issues from cost of living, education, and abortion. A political roundtable breaking down what you need to know from our gubernatorial debate this week on Newsmakers.
Welcome to Newsmakers. I'm Tim White alongside 12 News politics editor Ted Nisi. And on this political roundtable, we have 12 News political analyst Joe Fleming. And we welcome back Lisa Pelosi, political strategist. Welcome back to the program, everyone. Boy, the debate was on Tuesday. It felt like 10 years ago.
It does. Yeah, there's a lot going on.
These election weeks are just, they drag on and on and on. All right, so I want to go around the table briefly. I mean, Joe, you were in studio with us that night, and you watched it in person as opposed to on TV. But who do you think had a better performance on Tuesday night?
Tim, it's interesting. When I watched it in studio, I thought Ashley Kalis had a better performance. When I went back and watched the tape, I thought it was pretty much a wash. Neither one really stood out. And that's not good news for Ashley Kalis, because the two polls that have just come out show her in a double-digit deficit. So she needed to do something to really move the needle. I don't think she did that. Basically, she held her own. She looked good. But she didn't come across to move the needle much at all, I believe.
I wonder what the, before we go to Lisa here, what did you find the difference was between being here on set and watching at home on TV?
Well, you see the both candidates. You see their reactions and their faces.
That's not always caught on TV.
And that makes a difference in how you view things.
All right. Lisa, what did you think?
I was holding my breath because, you know, this is her very, very, very first time ever doing a debate against somebody who's done a number of debates, standing before the two of you, probably the best reporters in the state, you know, expecting tough questions.
And she's on Channel 10 saying the same thing this weekend.
No. I mean, you've got to think, the last time McKee had a number of people on stage with him, this was just one-on-one. So she held her own. I was waiting to see when the first swipe would happen, and I think it happened in the first 3 minutes.
Oh, for sure.
And then it was off to the races.
What do you think, Ted? I mean, you were a moderator, so it's a different perspective.
We always say, Tim, people ask us after always, who do you think won, who do you think won? And I always say, I don't like to say, because it's, first of all, you're moderating, so you're half your brain's on what's the next question, where are we going? But also, as Joe said, it's in the end, it's about the television broadcast, because 99.9% of voters are going to see it on television, even with an audience in the hall. It's about the television broadcast, and it can be very different. Right. I felt like it was a mixed night for both of them. I think Ashley Kalis certainly, as Joe said, I think held her own, being her first televised debate. I think she got warmed up as the broadcast went on. I thought she was more tentative at the beginning than I was expecting, and then by the end seemed very comfortable. Dan McKee, we've done a lot of debates with Dan McKee. He was Dan McKee. You know, he knew his talking points. I do think he drilled in the fact that he is the Democratic candidate in a Democratic state. But, you know, Dan McKee is also a touchy guy and had a few moments where, as usual with Dan McKee, he was, you know, he was touchy. And so in the end, I think it's, you know, I think a mixed night, as Joe said. I mean, if we think of that debate where Helena Foulkes came out so strong, universally she was seen as the winner or the person with the strongest performance. And that helped her make up a double-digit gap in the polls. I don't know if Ashley Kalis had that level of a night.
Well, and that's what we're going to be talking about here. Lisa, you want to add something?
Yeah, you know, she didn't do a knockout punch, and I didn't expect that to happen. But I think what she needed to do, especially speaking to the independent voters who are starting to tune in, did she give them a comfort level that she could be governor? And I think she did, the way she handled herself on the different positions that she addressed.
Well, master the obvious. I mean, look, if you're a Kalis supporter, you think she won. If you're a McKee supporter, you think he won. The question is those undecided voters. And speaking of undecideds, why don't we bring up the most recent poll that we had, which was from the Boston Globe Suffolk University poll. You can see Dan McKee gets 46% of the vote. I believe their sample was some 800 likely voters. Kalis got 36%, 14% undecided. So the race is technically still up for grabs. But as Lisa said, you know, was Kalis able to move the needle enough to offset the double-digit gap?
But Tim, I think she has to do more than that. She has to take down some of Dan McKee's voters due to the fact that it's a five-way race. The other three candidates, if they get 5% of the vote, all he needs is like 47% to win. The Globe has him at 46. We have him at 45 in our poll. So if he picks up like 2-3% of the undecided voter, he wins. She needs to bring his number down. That, I don't think she did.
That's
in the
debate. Challenge.
It
That's
is.
A challenge for anybody.
Especially for a Republican in a Democratic state.
Right.
It's, you know, it's in the end, and we'd be saying the reverse in Alabama, right? In a state has a base partisan lean, and you're fighting against the tide when you're in the opposite party. And it can be done, but it's hard.
Right.
One of the big topics from the debate was abortion, and we do want to play some quick snippets from the debate throughout this program in case you missed it. You can, of course, watch the entire debate on WPRI.com. But Ted first asked Ashley Kalish about what she said right on this program several weeks ago, that she would veto a budget that included any public funding for abortions. Here's that exchange.
Let me be perfectly clear, because I need to say it again. In 2019, the right to abortion was codified in state law. I will do nothing to change that law. I believe the people spoke through their elected officials. And like a majority of Rhode Islanders, I do not support partial birth or taxpayer-funded abortions. But I will do nothing to change that law.
But you would veto that if that comes through the Assembly next year. There's a lot of energy around it.
I do not support taxpayer-funded abortions.
Well, if their insurance covers a, you know, their family members are covered by insurance, then state workers should be as well, and so should be people on Medicaid. We're going to support that measure, and we have already put it into the preliminary of the budget. I'm not sure that Ms. Kalish understands when she vetoes the budget, she actually shuts down all of state government and all the programs that help assist the families that need assistance. That's what's happened in the state of Rhode Island, if she understood budget. This is really serious. And for Ms. Kalish to slough this off as being, oh, I'm with you, but she's completely against you. I am pro-choice. She is no choice. She doesn't have confidence in the women that live in this state of Rhode Island to actually make up their, to determine how they want to deal with their lives and their bodies. And she is not supportive of that.
The idea that I can't have a personal opinion as a woman and do my job as governor, which is to uphold the law of the state, is quite frankly not okay.
So the issue of abortion was the second biggest issue that voters said was on their mind going into Election Day. Of course, the first is cost of living. But I got to ask, how much does it matter in a state where the Roe standard is law? Is abortion, the topic of abortion, something that is going to, in a gubernatorial race, you talk about the congressional race aside, but is it that important where it's going to move the needle in this race, in the governor's race?
Well, look at the crosstab. Dan McKee has a very large lead with female voters. This issue keeps him with that large lead. So I think he's going to keep pushing that issue. I think it does have an impact. It may not be the number one issue, but it does have an impact that down the road, she could possibly do something to stop the abortions in the state of Rhode Island. So, I mean, they're going to try to play that all the way to the end. I believe there will be some impact from it.
This hurts, actually. Lisa, go ahead.
When I look at it, and I keep hearing her saying it over and over, I believe her that she's not going in. She's not running as governor to change the abortion law. She's been trying to speak directly to the voters, especially to women voters, that she's not going in and changing it. In Rhode Island, a woman has the ability to choose an abortion up to, I think, to the end. I don't even know if we have partial birth or, you know, toward the end of restrictions. We know 2/3 of the voters in Rhode Island want to have some sort of abortion protections. So she's trying to speak, she's trying to reassure, and as much as she says it, I guess it's just not resonating with the women.
Well, and also it doesn't stop Dan McKee from right. making it an issue in a, as you pointed out last time we checked, it's a very blue state in Rhode Island.
Well, and I do think in politics, whether it's about abortion or gay marriage, you've seen on some of these social issues, Republicans say, now it's settled. They've never come all the way of saying, I support the way it was settled. They just say, it's settled, so let's not talk about it anymore. Whereas, for example, in the congressional race, Alan Fung has said he'll vote for the more moderate Republican abortion rights bill that Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski have. That is a different position. He says he supports something with abortion rights. Ashley Kalish just says, I won't change what's there. And so I do think that nuance just makes it a little harder with the messaging. Though, again, as Lisa says, she keeps saying she doesn't want to change it. And look, let's be honest. The General Assembly, I don't care which of these people win, there's going to be a Democratic supermajority,
right.
And Speaker Joe Shikarchi is going to be the number one decider of what passes and what doesn't. So she also has a point with that. The odds of a anti-abortion bill reaching her desk are pretty low. But of course, there's executive branch orders and things like that someone might bring up.
Well, if abortion was a tricky issue for Ashley Kalis in the debate, I would say one of the tricky issues for Dan McKee was the matter of the RICAS test scores, which were pushed back from October to November. And Ashley Kalis said that that was all political. He wants to move the results of the test scores to after the November election. That obviously came up in the debate, and here's that exchange.
Let me address the RICAS issue. So what I'm hearing is he knows the scores, but he doesn't think that parents and teachers should know what the scores are. Well, you're holding the RICAS scores hostage for an election, and I'm hearing from teachers that say they need the scores in order to plan for their students' education, to work on an IEP. Parents deserve to know. They also deserve to know and to judge what you've said you've done for education by the scores before the election. Those scores were supposed to come out in October. The only other time that the scores were held was in 2018 when Gina Raimondo was running for governor, and that was the first year, so I'll give her a bye. But there is no reason that these scores cannot be ready now.
First of all, I never said they didn't answer the question why she sends her kids to public schools.
I
went to public schools. My wife teaches in public schools. I sent our kids to public schools. I believe in public schools. But I did not say I know the scores. I said I do understand what the scores are going to look like because of the circumstances of the last 2 years of working virtually, out of classroom, low attendance, teachers trying to struggle to deliver education plans online. We know the situation. Not only the education loss, but also the issues that have to do with mental health issues. We're dealing with those. So it really doesn't take a rocket science to understand that the scores are going to be low. And
all right, that was the exchange over the RICAS scores. You know, Ashley Kalis brought up 2018. That was also an election year. And I recall that Gina Raimondo got grief during that time politically. You know, no matter how McKee frames it, it's probably a lot of people are just going to view it as, you know, he's doing that to move it to after the election, right?
Yeah, I mean, you don't want the headline because the headline one day becomes a commercial the next day. So you got to think, does the governor not know exactly? So Ride hasn't shared any preliminary reports with him right now. So I'm a little, you know, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt that nothing's come across his desk right now. But he's been taking credit for so much that's happened since he became governor. He's got to take credit for what hasn't happened in education, and he's been backing off when he has answers like that.
Keep in mind, Tim, those tests were done when he was governor for maybe about a year. And I'm a former educator. You're not going to turn test scores around in 1 year, especially when you have COVID. So, I mean, he admitted in his statement they're very low. You know, by not releasing them, though, however, you're giving her an issue to run on. You know, almost in some ways, release them, get it over with. It's a one-day story.
Yeah, the governor did say something interesting that I think a lot of people missed because there was so much in the debate. But it sounded like people might remember Rhode Island is glomming off of the MCAS score that's been done in Massachusetts that you and I had to take when we were kids.
Yes.
And that it sounds like the same company processes them, and he seemed to be saying that, like, they finished the MCAS and now they're starting Rhode Island. It's going to take more time. I have not, as a reporter, vetted that. There's a lot going on, but right. I found that interesting too. Like that they're not at Ride; they're out with somebody else. I don't know what.
I think the argument to that would be, well, yeah, and the same company does MCAS the year prior, and all the scores came out in October. But, you know, a speed bump for him regardless. This is what we're going to do now. I want to move in the second half of the program. I want to talk about the question you asked, which is a great one on President Biden and former President Trump. But why don't we go to a break here on Newsmakers before we get to that? And we're also going to dive into another high-stakes debate that's coming up in the race to replace Congressman Jim Langevin. Stay with us. You're watching Newsmakers.
From 12 News, your local election headquarters, this is Newsmakers.
Look, people have been flooded with negative ads at home in this campaign, and it's undoubtedly going to get more tense over the next few weeks. So before we get to closing statements, I'm going to give you the opportunity to say something nice about your opponent, Mr. McKee. What do you have to say?
We always say nice things about our family. Families are important. So Ashley's family's important, and that would be my nice thing to say.
All right. And Ms. Kalis, something nice about your opponent?
I think it's really cool that your daughter's on The Voice. We should all be cheering for her and very proud of her as well.
Welcome back to Newsmakers. I'm Tim White. This is Ted Meese. We're doing a political roundtable, breaking down that gubernatorial debate, which was on Tuesday night here in our 12 News studios. Joe Fleming, Lisa Pelosi. This has been a tense roundtable. I'd like you to say something nice about Joe Fleming.
Sometimes your polls are right.
Just kidding. Joe is always right.
Always
These
right.
These are my Bible for election day.
I thought that was a nice answer by Ashley Kalis. And, you know, it's Kara McKee, right?
That's his daughter.
She had a great performance on NBC that night. All right, I do want to wrap up the gubernatorial debate with a question, Ted, that you asked where, you know, look, in a state where former Donald Trump is deeply unpopular, Ashley Kalis is trying to avoid any talk of him. You asked McKee about Biden running again, followed by Kalis on Trump. Here's a piece of that.
Do you think President Biden should run again, or do you think he should step aside?
President Biden's been the best president for the state of Rhode Island, and that's what I do. My job is to make sure we take care of the state of Rhode Island. I've been in his office. I also have been on calls with him about women's rights. Certainly differ with my opponent on that. And also on offshore wind. So yes, my answer would be yes. If he is feeling as though that he can run, we should support him as our next president.
If Trump runs for president again in 2024, will you support him?
You know, the questions about Trump are a distraction. He's not running. And
he says he's considering running.
I'm focused on this election and this president.
Mr. McKee answered the question. Are you open to supporting President Trump if he decides to run again?
I am not going to answer hypotheticals about a race that may or may not happen.
Can I just ask an obvious question here? You know, Ashley Kalis knows she's in a deep blue state. Right. She knows she's in a state that where Donald Trump is deeply unpopular. I don't think it's going to hurt her if she says, you know, I'd like to see, I think what Alan Fung said on the show is I'd like to see someone else run or something to that effect. Why didn't she just answer it that way?
Tim, I really don't know. All she had to say was simply, I will support the Republican nominee for president, whoever it is.
Well, then Ted would have gone, what if that's Donald Trump? Yeah.
If he's the Republican nominee.
What do you think, Lisa? You worked for a Republican governor.
Yeah, I think she's walking a very fine line. She needs the strong Trump supporters to come out and vote for her. They could be the ones to stay home, and that could make the difference here. You know, I looked up the numbers back when Trump first ran, 180,000 Rhode Islanders voted for him. Second time around, 200,000 Rhode Islanders voted. So she's speaking to them, you know, too. So I think she's trying to walk that very fine line. And she doesn't want, again, that headline to say, I support Donald Trump. And the next day we see the commercial from McKee saying.
Clearly, yeah, go ahead.
McKee's going to say that anyway. They're going to say she's a Donald Trump person. They're going to tie it to the right wing. Whether she says it or not, by saying she's for Trump, she is going to get those
but
Republicans.
But I do agree with Lisa. It's worse if
get
it's
out
true.
The vote.
Or if you've said it. Because the reporters then say, well, yeah, you did say that. Whereas if she didn't say it, we say, well, she didn't say. She just won't say which way she, you know, it's a little muddy.
And to your point, the people that support Donald Trump are not going to vote for Dan McKee. No. But the question is,
do they come out?
Do they come out?
Right.
Gotcha.
Right. And then when he called her a MAGA supporter, I was like, whoa, I've never had her, you know, in that camp in my mind. So he can say what he says. We're going to talk about Seth Magaziner. He's doing the same thing with Alan Fong.
And I do think, just one last thought on that, which is I will always think one of the most surprising things in this campaign was Ashley Kalis. You just saw how she was about Donald Trump. Understandably, in New England, she's just trying to avoid the national Republican brand. Sure. And yet, the day she started running, when I asked her, who's the Republican governor you admire most, figured she'd say Charlie Baker, Larry Hogan, Phil Scott, one of the sort
Lincoln
of known
Allman.
Monitors. Lincoln Allman. I did say current, in fairness, but
Lisa worked for, we should point out.
If you're watching Governor Allman, hope you're doing well.
Yeah.
And she said Ron DeSantis. Now, there are people watching today who love Ron DeSantis, and that's fine, but I think we also know he is a polarizing figure, and you're running in a blue state where you kind of want to get away from that Republican
that
brand.
That was pre-Martha's Vineyard, though.
It right. was, but she doubled down on it with Steph Machado after a couple of months, and so I think I just wonder if she the whole time avoided all the national Republican figures rather than say, well, I like DeSantis, but then try to avoid Trump. If again, she might have had a little bit of a cleaner argument to be like, I'm like Charlie Baker.
All right, I do want to pivot, Lisa, as you said, to the Fung Magaziner race. We're going to do that by bringing up some more poll results. Again, this one from the most recent Boston Globe, Suffolk University poll. Seth Magaziner at 37%, Alan Fung at 45%, and 13% undecided. This is a wider margin than from our poll. We had a 6-point margin, a 6-point lead for Alan Fung, if I recall. This is an 8-point lead for Alan Fung. You know, Ted, I think this these polls, these public polls, prompted the Magaziner campaign to put out their own internals, and Magaziner wasn't winning in that either.
No, I mean, if we keep this up for a second, Alex, so you see Magaziner at 37 here. They said Magaziner was at 40 in their own polling, which is also what we had at Channel 12. You look at Alan Fung, 45% in the Globe poll here, 46% in our poll, Joe. They had him at 43%. So not to make you do math at home, the Magaziner's campaign says themselves, we're down 3 points, but we're not down 6 or 8. You know, so when you're putting out your own poll in a deep blue, maybe not deep anymore, but in a blue district, showing you're down, clearly you're worried the narrative is going against you publicly.
The only thing is, in all the polls, in the Globe poll especially, in one of their cross tabs, union members, Seth Magaziner was ahead of Alan Fung by 1%. Mm. That's a group the unions could possibly move over the next 3 or 4 weeks. The other group is simply females. We had Magaziner ahead by 6. The Globe had him ahead by 9. So it's very close there, and they need to open that number up if you're a Magaziner. You need to get more females on your side.
You know, of course, they don't go into this level of detail, but tell me which union. If you're talking about a public safety sector union.
Who've endorsed Alan Fung already, some
that's,
of them.
Yeah. That's going to lean heavy, Fung, private sector versus.
Yeah, AFL-CIO, teachers, things like that. Those types of unions who have a lot of members. They need to increase that number. If it stays 43, 42, that's not good for Seth Magaziner. He needs to get a wider opening there. We've seen before unions support people who the union leadership does not want. Example was John Chafee against Julie Michelson way before your time, the U.S. Senate.
This is why we have you on the show, Joe.
This was 1972, to be clear.
No, it was.
Oh, no, this is 80.
72 was Chafee and Lauber.
Your memory is amazing.
This is masterclass.
Chafee got 43% of that union vote. If Fung can hold on to what he has in the union vote right now, it's going to be tough for Magaziner to close that gap.
Right. 72 is Chafee Pell. And then Chafee wins in 76. Right?
So, you know, Ted brought this up on, I think it was last week's show, and I think it's a really good point. The question is, look, Fung is leading in every poll that we have seen, but it's all under 50%. What's the highest he got?
46 in ours.
46 in ours. Is that his ceiling? Can he get beyond as a Republican in Rhode Island? Granted, CD2 is a little more purple than it is blue, I would say, but can he get beyond that 46?
I think so, and I think we can see that from your poll when I was looking at the independents and the Democrats who have crossed over to support Allen. I think Allen, his greatest characteristic is how much people like him. And as much as Seth Magaziner and the outside groups are trying to attack him on all these different fronts, I don't think it's resonating. I'm getting some mailers, you know, because of somebody in my household registered as a Democrat, and I'm getting these mailers in about what a radical Allen, you know, candidate Allen Fung. I'd laugh. Because we know Allen, he's been around a long period of time. Seth Magaziner is not making the case that he's this radical Republican who's going to do all this extremist thing and take Rhode Island down.
Yeah, you saw Mike Rea, who was a senior advisor to Gina Raimondo on her 2018 campaign, put up a little thread on Twitter, as we millennials are wont to do, and made the case that, yes, he agrees as a Democrat that Alan Fung will go down and vote to make Kevin McCarthy speaker and all that stuff they're saying. But he said, when we ran against Alan Fung and defeated him, we focused on local stuff. Cranston, questions about him as mayor, tend to take that away because his persona is a friendly, decent guy.
Well, and that's why I think that the debates in this race, even more so, I would say, than in the gubernatorial race, are critical. And we have a debate coming up next Tuesday, or this Tuesday, I should say, live from the Providence Performing Arts Center. It's at 7 o'clock. There, I believe, are tickets still available. So if you want to attend in person, you can go to WPRI.com. If you want to sit in the comfort of your own home, it'll be at 7 o'clock, 1 hour, commercial-free Tuesday night. So, you know, we saw it with Helena Foulkes in the Democratic primary, how crucial debates can be. This is not one where I think Alan Fung can just sort of sit back and try and coast his way through it.
He has to get out there and really be aggressive also, I believe. If he sits back, he could lose votes, and he can't afford that. Like you said, does he have a ceiling at 45, 46? So he has to be aggressive. He has to talk about what he wants to accomplish in Congress and how he's going to work with both sides of the aisle. I think Rhode Island's looking for more of a moderate type of congressman. And if he's the Republican, he has to come across that way.
Go ahead, Lisa.
And, you know, I talked earlier about McKee's experience debating and Ashley's not. Look at Alan Fong. He's done two, you know, gubernatorial debates, and he's had people like Humus Healy on the stage with him. Seth Magazine, I can't even remember who he debated in the past.
He had a debate 2014 here, but I don't think he had debates in 2018.
Well, he had a primary debate in the 2nd Congressional District here.
That's true, right?
Was that
a sleepy race? I
already forgot. That just went right over.
I was here. I remember it.
I forgot.
That's true. Either way, I mean, they're two fairly experienced debaters, I would say. I think you were making the point that we have a minute left here. You were making the point that Fong has more experience than Magazine.
And he is.
Right?
And, you know, as a trained lawyer, I mean, he holds his own when he's on the debate stage. He knows what the issues are going to be that Seth Magazine is coming after him. He's going to be so well prepared. So sit back and watch.
Go ahead, Joe.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say briefly that the one thing to keep in mind if this starts to shift towards Seth Magazine, or the opportunity he has, is Joe Biden got 56% in the CD2 in 2000. Seth Magazine is down at 40-ish. So there's a ton of points there you could make up, whereas Alan Fung is already getting or beating Donald Trump's share of the vote. So that's the task for the Magaziner campaign, and it's maybe not one they can do, but they're going to try get some of those people back who voted for Joe Biden.
You have 10 seconds.
Alan Fung has to be careful on the debate stage. He may be more experienced, but remember the slip or the answer to the question about the unions, a right to work in one of the debates? He has to be careful when he answers a question.
Joe Fleming, Lisa Pelosi, Ted Nesi, thanks so much for joining us. We'll see you Tuesday night live from the Providence Performing Arts Center.